everybody. Welcome back to another episode of App Chatter. This is episode number 13, and on today's show, we're going to be talking about all kinds of things, primarily the news out of WWDC about the iPhone 4 and the new operating system. Also, some controversy with the New York Times and AT&T, and we might even get to some apps.
Maybe.
But first, maybe. We'll see. We'll see how long this runs. I am Eric, and I am joined tonight by Lou.
Hey, everybody.
And also by Jeff.
Hi, I'm Cranky.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
No, sorry. Uh-oh.
I've had a long day.
Uh-oh. Is that one of the dwarves?
I don't remember him being in there.
Yeah.
Cranky. What is it? Sleepy, sneezy, and cranky.
Yeah.
I always want to say dumpy.
I do too.
That's not one of them.
Kind of walking around with the shirt half untucked and,
yeah,
and his hat kind of falling off his head. Yeah, I remember that dwarf.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why are you grumpy? Why are you cranky?
I've just had a long day. I've been, you know, working on my resume and stuff like that.
Oh, just, yeah, that'll do it.
You know, you're in a house all day. I work from home, and so I've got babies running around. I got all kinds of crap going on. I'm just cranky. What's wrong with just being cranky every now and then?
Nothing. Don't hit me.
All right, Dan.
That's what we don't record in the same room together.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank goodness for Skype. All right.
We're not civilized like Twit. We're also not as well funded either, but that's beside the point.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah, maybe.
It'll just take some time. All right, so the big news this week was the new iPhone and the new iOS. Now, Jeff, you covered some of this on Tech Chatter earlier in the week.
Yeah, we recorded that Monday, so really just hours after WWDC keynotes, you know. So yeah. We kind of got the first initial impressions of it.
Yeah, that's the worst part about doing a weekly podcast is sometimes you get things like the day it comes out, and other times you get it almost a week after it's news. And unfortunately, this time we were scooped by our own podcast, Tech Chatter, which,
That's all right. I didn't say anything useful on Tech Chatter, so I saved it all for
app. Save the
a lot of good
us.
You were. Right. Yes. There you go. Now, see, the other Jeff over on Tech Chatter, he wanted to get rid of his iPhone. He had he was kind of tired of it, and he decided to jailbreak it. My understanding was that went pretty well for him. But then he was going to scrap it and get the Evo.
Which he did.
He did.
He got it at launch. Got it on Friday.
Okay.
And so the first 25 minutes of Tech Chatter is actually about the HTC Evo. So if you're interested in that, then you should go listen to Tech Chatter.
I'm only curious in regards to how it compares to the iPhone. And I'm wondering if he kind of regrets that decision now.
I don't think that he does. I mean, I'm not going to put words into his mouth. I think the Evo is definitely the phone that everybody's comparing the iPhone 4 to.
Yeah.
Everybody's making those one-to-one comparisons. So I don't think that we'll be the only ones doing that. I think it looks like a great phone, and I think that if for whatever reason you really hate AT&T or you don't want to get an iPhone for whatever reason, I think that the HTC Evo is probably the way to go.
Yeah.
That being said, though, I think it's a distant second, but that's just me.
I don't know as much about the Evo as I probably should, but I think I would agree with you. Now, the thing is, go ahead.
Well, I think it does some things very well, which a lot of the Android phones do. There's no doubt about it.
Sure.
The HTC before Monday had the best screen out there. It's still the largest.
Right.
It looks great. It's got a user changeable battery. It's got a built-in stand. The screen is just really nice and large. It's got runs Android whatever version they're out now. I don't know. And it's 4G capable. So whatever Sprint has 4G, you've got that speed, which is really nice.
Right.
But it doesn't have the pixel density the iPhone 4 is going to have.
That's very true.
Right.
It doesn't have the apps.
And the storage on it is mini micro SD card, and you have to take out the battery to change that out, and you know, I don't know. There's some things I don't particularly like the Android, but what Jeff on Tech Chatter liked about it was that he could kind of get in there and geek out about it. He could customize some things, he could tweak some things. I think he could probably mold it to what he needed it to be. better than he can the iPhone, which of course that's just kind of Apple. Apple's in this particular, in the iOS, they are going to kind of have things a little more regimented, and there are pluses and minuses to that. If you like to tinker with things, that's a minus.
Yeah, but you know, I don't want to have to tinker with things.
I agree.
You know, when I had my Palm OS and my Windows Mobile phone, I felt like I had to go in and I had to install a bunch of stuff. And I don't mean just, you know, regular apps. I mean like control panel type things, like utilities that kind of hack the OS to make it do certain things. Now, granted, you know, we haven't had multitasking and there's some things we haven't had, but I haven't really felt the need to go in and tweak and hack what's there.
Right.
I know some people do. But
that's a very good point, because I mean, I think that everybody that's down on Apple because it's not open and you can't do the things that, you know, I want to do this, I want to change the background, I want to change this, I want to change these different sounds. Those are all the real geek people that are saying, you know, hey, I'm used to doing this on the computer, so I feel comfortable doing it on a phone. But that's not the majority of people out there.
Right.
The majority of users want to get a device out of the box, have it work, say, oh, I can download this cool app and use that. Oh, nice. And that's what they really want. So, you know, for the mass market, does Android really make a lot of sense?
From the context of going in and kind of hacking and tweaking, I don't think that that's necessarily going to be something that most users are going to care about. Like you said, I mean, most smartphone users, I don't think, at least a lot of the what we're seeing right now, I don't think it's necessarily just techies anymore. It used to be.
Right.
Yeah, but the demographic is changing.
Yeah, very quickly. So I don't think, like, I bet most iPhone users have no idea what jailbreaking even is.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, probably. I think you have the tech blogosphere or whatever kind of term you want to slap on it is a very vocal minority, which you have that in a lot of industries, that there are these people who kind of really hyper-focus on whatever industry that they're looking at, and they're very vocal about it, be it the entertainment industry, the technology industry, whatever. And we have the same thing here. These power users who understand all these different ins and outs and how many radios a phone's going to have as far as antennas and things like that, this, that, and the other, and they compare these things, the average user doesn't see that stuff. So I think the biggest thing that the Evo has for it is that it's a huge screen, it's got a user-changeable battery, and it's not on AT&T. It's available on other networks. I think those are the three things that are going to be attractive to most buyers.
Well, let's move on to the WWDC stuff. You mentioned it's not on AT&T. That's something that a lot of people were hoping would have come out of WWDC this week was a Verizon iPhone.
I didn't see it.
And I think that, honestly, people every time Steve gets anywhere near a stage, people hope it's going to be to announce a Verizon iPhone.
Every time.
Yeah, and I just... I mean, I'm sure it will happen one day. I don't understand why people hold their breath every time.
Well, I think one of the compelling reasons this time, or maybe it was just kind of an excuse for people to say, no, it's really going to be this time, honest, was the rate changes from AT&T.
Right.
You know, we get the iPad and they give us rates, and then a month later, they change the rates, and it just happened to coincide with, you know, a week or two before WWDC, and people are like, I wonder if this is because there's some contract issue, like they've lost their exclusivity or something like that. And that wasn't the case. But I guess this one time I can kind of see why maybe people thought it could be happening.
And what do you think the real reason for that is now, in hindsight, from WWDC? I have an answer, but I'm just curious.
Oh, okay. You know, I could guess, but I guess it all comes back to the fact that I think that AT&T just doesn't... I think they want to rein in some of their usage issues and the fact that their network is being flooded in a lot of key cities. You know, high populations and people using a lot of video and things like that. I think they're worried that that's going to bog up the network. And now you've got... Skype is on 3G. Netflix is on 3G. ABC is on 3G, and sure, they, you know, they're trimming down the bitrate of the video and all, but still.
Right.
I think that's what it is. What's your answer, though? You're probably more in the know about this type of thing than I am.
Well, no, I don't think I'm more in the know. I think that you like the timeline you laid out there is that the iPad 3G came out, we had rates, they were announced, it was awesome, people signed up for it, and then a month later, things change just a few, you know, couple weeks out or whatever from WWDC. And like you said, people jump to Verizon, that makes sense. However, seeing the features that the iPhone 4 has, FaceTime calling, so video calling, okay, mm-hmm. which right now is only on Wi-Fi, I understand that, but right. you also now have a high-def video recording, which you're going to be able to edit on the go in an iMovie for the iPhone, and then also upload in high def. Okay, so I'm sure they're going to want to move that FaceTime calling onto the cellular network. I think that they're going to see a larger use of video and things like that on their network. I think they're bracing for that. I also think that they were going to have to make this change at some point. They've stuck with the unlimited data since the original iPhone. They were going to have to make this change at some point. And I think now what they anticipate might be coming in from additional traffic with the iPhone 4, you know, I think they anticipate the iPhone 4 selling very well. And yeah. even new customers are going to be coming in for this. I think they're just making a move to try to just get some people to be a little more aware of their bandwidth.
Well, you know, one of the things to consider about that is for the last year or so, I've been hearing talk about all the carriers wanting to go to some sort of a tiered pricing scale for data usage and not just an all or nothing, but, you know, give them a taste, give them a little more, and then give them an unlimited. So now they can charge you based on what you're going to use. And also, it was probably smart to introduce that before stuff like FaceTime on 3G comes out maybe a year or so from now. When people are used to using a lot more data, right now they said we're not using data as much, so you don't need to get, you know, 2 gigs if you don't need to. So would it make it easier for you to say, okay, I'll just get the $15 a month plan, and then a year from now find out, oh, now I'm using a lot more data because I'm doing Netflix and ABC and everything else. So, you know, then your usage is going up after the fact.
Right. And let's remember, too, that we had Netflix for the iPhone was announced at WWDC.
Right.
Which is using the same, you know, buffering technology that the ABC app uses.
You know, the whole thing is just frustrating to me, though, because while I think that the pricing schemes, you know, we talked about this last week, I think they're probably fair, and I think that they will probably be a better deal for a lot of users. I just don't like having to monitor how much bandwidth I'm using. I don't want to sit there and nitpick over it or wonder, well, yeah, I kind of want to watch this right now, but I guess, you know, maybe I should wait until I get home or stream it over Wi-Fi later or something like that. I don't want my experience to be a should I do this or shouldn't I do it based on, you know, how much this is going to count toward my bandwidth and having to look at meters and crap like that. It's just it takes away from the experience of just kind of being able to pull out a device and tap into whatever I want to tap into.
Yeah, it kind of feels like the old days of AOL when you had, you know, so many minutes a month. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I can't, it's can't exactly send too like much that. Down online today, you know, so.
I can't receive right. too many wares in my email or else I won't be able to download them.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the specs for the iPhone 4. I mean, we've seen a little bit of it before, thanks to the whole Gizmodo debacle. So we kind of already have an idea of what it looks like, and we've got that metal band around the outside, which now makes sense to me.
And it's awesome.
And now I'm okay with it. It really is.
Yeah.
Finding out that's a collection of antennas, they should have totally done that before. I'm completely on board with that now.
You know, they didn't mention how much better the reception was on that design, though. I'm kind of curious. Is it? I mean, hopefully it is a lot better. It'd be fantastic. But they didn't talk about that.
Well, and I don't know that they can actually really talk about that in a keynote because it's going to vary so much between population and location and,
right.
and all. I mean, I think they probably can say it's going to improve reception. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they can come up with specifics enough for it to really be a point that Steve could really sell in a keynote.
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. you know, there's hope for some meat to it, you know.
I don't know if the decision was made to improve reception or to reduce thickness.
Could be that too.
Mm.
I mean, I think it was probably made for both, but I mean, I think it's, I mean, it's it has to do both, but I think the main benefactor of that, because this phone is 24% thinner than the 3GS, which was already a thin phone.
Right.
Right.
So this is ridiculous. I can't wait to get my hands on it because it is going to be just slim.
Yeah, I kind of want to see what it feels like.
I think it's going to feel fantastic. Both sides of glass, stainless steel. I think it's gonna feel, from everything I've heard from people who were at the keynote, got to play with it afterwards, it feels extremely well made.
Right.
And I'm excited.
You know, I really wish my iPad had something to improve the reception. The one complaint I have about my iPad is my Wi-Fi just stinks.
Well, that's because of the aluminum.
Yeah.
You have that huge aluminum shield basically on the back of it.
And it's obnoxious. I hate it. Like I've got maybe like one bar.
Ooh, and I wonder now if the iPad 2 is going to have this special process.
I hope so.
Tempered stainless steel.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up because I'm waiting for version 2, but I'm thinking I'm looking at a small version of iPad 2. You know,
Lou's going to be laughing at us.
Yeah, hey, I can get Wi-Fi all over the place.
That beautiful screen on that big device. Oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did feel a little bit kind of that little punch in the stomach when he's like, this has 74% of the pixels the iPad has. I'm like, well, crap. Now my iPhones are way better than my iPad. Jerk.
Yeah. By the way, before people write in and tell me how to fix the Wi-Fi issue on my iPad, I'm talking about after having already done that, renaming the different bands on the Wi-Fi router. And, you know, blah, 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 blah. I've done all the tricks. I've got Wi-Fi, but only just barely. And it's
come on, people. We're professionals. Okay.
Yeah, we know what we're doing. We looked it up.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So speaking of displays, this Retina display.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the idea is the human eye can only handle about 300 pixels per inch at 12 inches away from your face. So, and as a point of reference, most print magazines are at about 300 dots per inch.
All books are 300 DPI.
Yeah.
I actually talked to a friend of mine in the publishing industry yesterday about this. And she said, yeah, we have to submit everything at least 300 DPI.
So just to give you an idea there, this is going to be 326 PPI instead of dots per inch. It's obviously pixels per inch.
I mean, that's a 1-to-1 ratio. They're the same thing.
Yeah.
That's going to be sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, twice the resolution, which means four times the number of pixels as the current iPhone. And it's going to look awesome.
Yeah.
Now, existing apps are going to continue to work. And the text, if you programmed your app in, what is it, Xcode? Then it should, the UI interface, like the buttons and stuff like that, should scale up. Or I don't think it even scales up. I think it's just, it will natively work. And the text will natively work, but the images will be scaled up. But I don't think it should matter very much. It's not like it's scaling up to a bigger screen. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, but I think if you have a higher density, I think you're going to see some. If these graphics were just barely for the iPhone, and I think if you have some apps that are universal, can work on the iPhone and the iPad, I don't think they're going to need much updating as far as the graphics go. However, right. I think if they have an iPhone-only version and those graphics are kind of low-res already, I think you're going to see some aliasing on those. They're going to need to get those updated to make them look as well as they can.
It'll definitely be noticeable, but I don't think it's going to break anything. I don't think it's going to be the same issue as what people are having upscaling a lot of the stuff on the iPad. Now, as far as the universal apps, I don't know exactly how the universal switching works. If it doesn't recognize it as an iPad, it might not even try to display the better graphics and such. So I don't know if that's, if that's a flag that gets tripped.
Yeah, I'm not a developer, so I don't know if they can access the same textures or graphics files or how that works. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I guess we'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, somebody's smarter than us emails. In the keynote, Steve mentioned he'd like developers to start developing for that new higher resolution screen.
Right.
What happens to a 3GS now, though? I mean, we already
have those better graphics in it, you mean?
Yeah. What's it going to do to that? Scale it down? Is it going to...
Yeah, good question.
I would imagine it would have to. Nothing was said about it, but that would be a safe assumption, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Which I think the 3GS is powerful enough to do. My concern is going to be the 3G. Is it going to have the power to how's it going to run some of those apps that get this higher resolution art?
But you know what?
Scale down the fly.
If you've got a 3G, you're probably due for an upgrade. Your AT&T account will probably allow you to upgrade. And the 3GS is now going to be $99. So if you're on a 3G,
so it's really your own fault if the darn thing doesn't work.
Right. I mean, it's not that I don't have any sympathy for you, but I don't think you can fairly have the expectation of a lot of this stuff working.
So, well, I think it'll still work. Yeah. I'm just wondering if they're going to take a real performance hit.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
Yeah. They'll be slower.
Yeah, but that's and there'll just be some happen. Features of anywhere. The new OS that won't work.
It happens anywhere in any computing.
Right. Oh, exactly.
You know.
I mean, you can't complain about it. This just that's how technology upgrades are. That's life. But the thing is, I mean, even if you don't want to jump to the iPhone 4, you can get a 3GS for $99.
Yeah.
You know, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. As far as phones go, it's still expensive compared to the free plans out there, but $99 is not bad for an iPhone.
For $100 more, you can get the iPhone 4 and be awesome.
Yeah. Actually, $99, though, for a smartphone in general.
True,
isn't
yeah, for
bad.
A smartphone,
I mean,
right.
Yeah, so sure, it's not like a free phone, but I can't think of too many free smartphones out there, at least no good ones.
Well, I mean, for an Apple product, $99, I mean, that has nothing, the technology right. and precision of the iPhone 3GS. I mean, that's practically stealing the thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. A no-brainer. But
it's an 8-gig phone, so it's not the 16 or 32, but it is still pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a good question. It's a little tangent here. So it turns out I was wrong. I actually had accidentally checked from my wife's phone and not my own phone. I am not eligible for the full upgrade. I'm eligible for the reduced discount upgrade, but my wife is eligible for an upgrade. So I'm going to see, maybe I can, you know, call it a Father's Day thing or something and, you know, play that angle. But so in the past, you know, between the podcast and I'm addicted to apps. If it's free and it looks like it might be okay, I'll download it. If it's 99 cents or even $1.99 and it looks like it's probably good, I download it. I'm addicted. So I've always gone with the higher capacity phones, but now with the iPad, and I've got a 64 gig iPad. Does it matter to get, I mean, do I really need to get the larger capacity iPhone?
But you will.
Well, this is the one time I might not. I don't know, because I don't find that there are that many things I have to have on the go with me anymore. Well, and as far as like casual use, I've got my iPad with me so often.
Yes, anything video related or book related, just right, or games, you're going to do on the iPad, right?
I see. Even books are you know, small capacity, but video I'm going to do on my iPad. Mm-hmm. Music I'll probably still want on my phone, but you know, I'm used to just picking selective stuff for in the car now anyway. What else? Comic books maybe are a little bit higher capacity than regular books, but again, iPad.
Yep.
Well, I'm in the same position you are in that I have a 16 gig. I have a 16 gig 3GS and a 64 gig iPad. And of course,
right.
At the time when we bought the 3GS, we just really couldn't justify the additional money because we were buying two phones at the time for both getting 32 gigs. And you know, yeah. I come from a 16 gig 3G. And so, you know, now having the iPad, I mean, I'm doing essentially what you're talking about. I have almost all of my video content loaded onto the iPad. I keep a couple of things on the iPhone, and the rest I load with music. And I don't anticipate getting the 32 gig iPhone 4 because I've got my iPad. And really, mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal when I just had the iPhone. You know, I could put on there two or three movies and four or five TV shows and then load the rest with music, and I didn't feel really restricted. And at the end of the day, if I feel restricted by having four or five TV shows and three or four movies with me on the go, I need to maybe assess my priorities.
Yeah, that's probably very true. And, you know, I guess I could try it for a year, and if it turns out it's not enough, then I upgrade to a bigger one the following year, and my wife gets the 16 gig.
Yeah. Some people were disappointed that the 64 gig didn't come out for the iPhone 4, that they stayed at 16 and 32, and maybe just kind of going along in the same vein that I was talking about. I'm not really in that camp, because I just, that's a crap load of storage for your phone. If it's your only device, I can kind of see that, but...
Well, it boils down to this. Would you rather have a better battery or more capacity? Because the space has got to go to something.
Right. Yeah. At the end of the day, I would rather have the better screen.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's one of the options too.
Oh, sorry. I thought that was hidden option C.
I was in the camp of waiting for a 64 gig iPhone. Surprised it didn't come out. I guess not the end of the world. I'm happy with my 32 that I have now. But from the only guy in the room that doesn't have an iPad, I'm not sure I'd want to go down to a 16 gig phone. I do carry more stuff on the phone with me than you guys do, because I don't have another big, right, beautiful display to play it on. Granted, do I need to keep as much on the iPhone as I do? No, I could be a little better with managing my playlists on video podcasts and that kind of stuff. But
you don't want the maintenance of your device to be a chore.
Right. I'm kind of lazy, so.
Well, I mean, but it does kind of take the fun out of it. I want to not have to worry about things like that. I want to grab it and go.
Right. I want to set it and forget it, like the Ronco food dehydrator.
There you go. That's exactly what I think of when I think of my iPhone. Wow.
Going to dry out some meat for you.
All right. So moving along, we have a gyroscope.
Yeah. That count that as one of those things that I think, hey, that's cool. I've played with a gyroscope before. I have no idea what that really means.
Yeah, I kind of had the same thought.
Well, okay, so to describe it, this is a little tricky. Everybody who has an iPhone knows that you can tilt it, you know, forward, backwards, left, and right. I mean, you've all done some type of accelerometer-based game, okay?
Yes.
But if you're holding it upright in your hand, okay, so that it's perpendicular to the ground, it is parallel to your body as you're standing up, and you turn. Okay, other than the compass, a game doesn't do anything, because the iPhone isn't tilting. You're just turning. Okay? So the gyroscope is different. As you turn, it will actually detect where it is in relation to I guess the ground. Or better yet would be if you're circling around an object. If you have another person standing in front of you and you have your phone pointing at them, if you were to then walk your way around the person, or if you're a gamer, if you were to circle strafe them, I guess would be a more accurate term, then the phone will actually detect that and can move around. So what Steve was doing during the keynote was he was playing Jenga. And in the accelerometer mode, you know, he kind of turns around or walks around in a circle with the iPhone, and it doesn't move. It only moves if he tilts the phone. With the gyroscope mode, it is as if he is walking around this Jenga tower and can approach different pieces from different angles. So the idea would be, I don't know if you guys have ever played like Zenbound. No. That's going to be a difficult one to explain verbally. It's a pretty popular game, but it's Jenga's as good an example of this as anything else. But the idea is that you can get completely three-dimensional around a virtual object. Or I'm sure there are going to be a lot of augmented reality applications for this. What I'm wondering is whether or not I really care, because if I'm going to sit there and play a game like Jenga, I would rather just take two fingers and rotate whatever it is on the screen rather than get up out of my chair and walk around the room. Right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, I mean, doesn't it seem kind of silly? It's one of those, like you've talked before, Jeff, about the fact that there are kind of proof of concept demos.
Right, right.
That are impressive. Apps,
yeah.
But do I really want to do that? I'm sure there's some application for it. I don't mean app application. I mean a way to apply it somehow.
Right.
And I haven't really tried to think outside the box on this one. I'm sure there's something.
So, well, so what you're saying is if you wanted to actually get up and move around, you'd play the real game.
Yes.
And not play the app.
If I really wanted to get up and move around, I'd get my Nintendo Wii out. You know?
There you go. Now, didn't they also say this is going to make you know, accelerometer-based game is more accurate.
Yes, the accelerometer is more accurate now, too.
So that's probably more of what it's been used for than, you know, the Jenga concept you showed.
Right. I think primarily you're going to see this benefit accelerometer-based games. Mm-hmm. And I think also what you're going to see is that, you know, augmented reality apps are probably going to take the biggest benefactors of this. If you're not familiar with augmented reality, basically you can hold your phone out. It uses the camera. If you see a shot of If you see a street side, you see all the restaurants on the street, it can overlay an icon on each of those restaurants telling you what kind of food it is and what its Zagat rating is or so on and so forth.
Right.
And so you can just walk around holding your iPhone out like a big viewfinder, and then it can just kind of show you this stuff.
Looking like a total dork as you're walking down the street.
No, yes. Come on.
Right. Well, and looking like a total dork as you're walking around FaceTime video chatting all over the place.
I know. That's another one that, you know, we talked about before. I don't really want people to be looking at me while I'm talking to them, but that was another big that was actually the one more thing.
Yeah, that Steve was Jobs a big announcement at the end.
Brought that
which
back.
Was the worst kept secret of the entire keynote, because he completely showed off the front facing camera, breezed right over the thing.
Here's a camera in the front. What do you think we're going to do with it?
This is a brand new feature we've never had before, and we're going to move past it now.
Ignore the man behind the curtain.
Right.
So not to chase a huge rabbit hole here, but I'm sorry. I just got distracted by something. I went to go check Facebook on my freaking iPad, and they're now redirecting it to the mobile Facebook site. This is the site made for tiny little phones. This is not even the touch version of Facebook Mobile.
What? It didn't used to do that.
Facebook.com. I've been going to their Facebook site on my iPad Safari since I've gotten it and not had a problem. Now all of a sudden I'm getting a redirect. That's not cool. That's ticking me off. And you haven't put out an official Facebook app for the iPad yet. So
I know. That's really surprising.
You hate me, Facebook, being an iPad owner. You're going to get cranky, Jeff. Not for anybody.
Yeah, I'm getting the same thing. This is ridiculous. And you can't turn it off, it doesn't look like.
No, and I hate that. I hate pages that redirect me because they detect I'm using a quote-unquote mobile browser to a page that I can't back out of.
As if I needed more reasons to hate Facebook.
Right. Oh, goodness. This pisses me off more than their freaking privacy settings.
They have just removed any chance of me using it from my iPad now, which is the only way I'm going to use it at all. So I'm not going to do the mobile site on my iPad. And they don't have a client. And none of the Twitter clients on the iPhone that will view Facebook, such as TweetDeck, will do it from their iPad apps. TweetDeck for the iPad will not check Facebook.
I just don't get why they did this. I don't understand.
They've got something against the iPad.
They'll fix it, maybe. I don't know.
Like someday.
Oh, I'm about to get cranky. I'm going to shut my tongue.
About to get cranky? Wait a minute. I thought you started out cranky.
Oh, no. This is pre-cranky.
Uh-oh.
He's getting worse.
Well, then I think Jeff is definitely someone with whom I would not want to be using the new FaceTime feature. See, how do you like that transition? That's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, that's not I've been practicing. I'm ugly. It's because I'm cranky.
Exactly.
Right.
So, yeah, the front-facing camera with the video chat. The catch, of course, is that it only works from an iPhone 4 to another iPhone 4.
On Wi-Fi.
On Wi-Fi.
On Wi-Fi only, yep.
Yes. Now, my understanding is that it's open, so it's something that Skype has publicly said that they're going to look into and are happy to be working with Apple in the future on this. So I guess we should be expecting a Skype video chat feature coming for the iPhone soon. But you've got to open it up outside of just the iPhone 4. You need to do iChat. You need to do Skype. You need to do something other than just the iPhone 4. Like anybody I can think of that I might want to video chat with, other than my wife, and we're only going to have one iPhone 4, so it won't even work for her. I don't even have anybody that I'm going to want to do this with.
Well, and here's something that was very specific about when Steve was demoing this that I thought was really important. He made a point of saying that you can do this without any setup at all. You don't need a separate server. You don't need a buddy list. You don't need to sign up for anything. You just make a call. And that's the difference between FaceTime calling and video chatting with Skype or iChat or your chat of choice.
Okay.
This is video chat for the rest of us.
Well, this is not video chat. Video chat is already a buddy-less thing. This is video calling, which we've only seen in bad Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. You know, Michael Ironside and Sharon Stone. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
That's fine, but I would rather have a little bit of setup and use this front-facing camera with a Skype call instead. And be able to talk to people who might have a webcam. I don't want to have this limited to just a particular device. I want to be able to use it on the couch with Nicholas to have a webcam call to, you know, his grandma and grandpa up in Michigan, and they can see each over the iPhone on our end and their laptop on their end. That's really the usefulness for this. That's where this needs to be.
Well, that is Eric the power user talking. Honestly. Because, I mean, I don't know.
Okay, but you know what? You'd be surprised how many grandparents now use video calling
through a
webcam to see their grandkids. That one specific, narrow application of that has just skyrocketed. Especially with cheaper laptops and netbooks and things like that.
Yeah, but there's still a lot of people that aren't that tech savvy. I mean, my parents, for example, you know, they're not grandparents' age, really, but they are, but they're not. But they're not as, you know, they're not going to be tech savvy enough to, they have a hard time pulling up a website sometimes. And I'm like, huh. So really just calling, video calling would be the easiest thing for them to understand.
But you know what's going to happen? This is what happens with everybody. Do you have any kids, Lou? You don't have kids, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. So if and when you get kids, then your parents are going to say, hey, our neighbors told us that they talked to their kids through some webcam picture phone thingy where it's over the internet and it's some voice over IP thing or something. Anyway, can you come over to our house at Thanksgiving and spend your entire vacation with us setting this up on our computer for us, please? And oh, can you also remove all of our viruses and malware while you're at it?
From our $2.99 Dell.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing. They hear about, once you get the grandkids, all of a sudden,
right,
now they're grandparents and they talk with the other grandparent people and they're like, oh, I just saw my baby the other day on webcam. Every other day I get to see my grandchild. What about you?
Oh, I don't get to do that. I should talk to my son and have him set that up. And then you're stuck.
Yeah, if you don't know this, some of the most competitive people in the world are grandparents.
Wow. Okay,
they are always comparing notes and things, and my little one did this, and it's kind of vicious.
It's like the new mom syndrome all over again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's like, it's worse because they don't know all the bad stuff the child does, like get cranky and stuff, so they're not jaded. They just see all the great stuff, and then they just compare all that stuff.
Yeah. So, point is, your parents might not know how to do it right now,
but
they will ask you to teach them once you get kids. So the grandparent, that is really the big feature for webcam, I think.
I'm not saying Apple shouldn't have done it the way they did it, but I kind of agree with Jeff that I see why they did that. I'd like to see it open up more. Maybe this open standard would be, you know, a way to go. And they already got iChat and the Mac, so why don't they have it as part of the iPhone 4?
Yeah, and that's all I'm saying. I mean, this FaceTime thing, that's fine. I don't have any complaints about it. I just also want to be able to communicate with people at a PC through this.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying. Now, the FaceTime thing looks great, and it looks like it performs well, and it's very easy to use. More power to them. I am never going to use it.
Well, here's Apple's MO, like they do with everything. Okay, they introduced a baseline product. In this case, it's a baseline feature. And they grow it, okay? Yep. They introduce the iPhone with no hardware keyboard, all touchscreen display, mostly just display on the glass. Holy crap, and it doesn't have 3G. And it doesn't have this, and it doesn't have that, and it doesn't have all this other stuff. They introduce a baseline product or feature, and they grow it. Same thing with the iPad. Now, same thing, I think, with FaceTime. I think FaceTime has a potential to be a big shift in the way that a lot of people begin to communicate, because there are going to be millions of iPhone 4s sold in the next year. And that's a big deal. Now, this is actually fairly commonplace in Japan. This is not a big deal over there. People walk around all the time talking, you know, video chatting on their phone. Of course, they have a ridiculous amount of bandwidth over there, so they can do whatever they want. But so, this is a new concept over here, and I think that they're gonna grow it, and they're gonna grow it bit by bit. I think if they introduce it all with these, and you can iChat, and you can Skype, and you can make it a wireless webcam, and you can do this and this and this, that all that gets lost, and the only thing people focus on is the main thing anyway. So let's just only do the main thing, do it right, and then we'll grow our main millions and millions and millions of customer base with us. Mm-hmm.
Well, and frankly, if it's going to be a third party who's going to come in and do something different with it anyway, let the third party promote that. And then if it turns out to be a really big deal, then yeah, you know, you can mention it as an example in some upcoming keynote speech or something. But, you know, if Skype is going to also do it, let Skype promote their own app on the phone. I mean, really, all Apple needs to do is exactly this, just the FaceTime thing, like you said.
Right. And they're going to make it simple, the codec
make it work
source.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that there's anything more that Apple could have would want to do. And then by making their APIs or codecs or whatever you want to call it open, I think that does bring in Skypes and things like that to where you can
absolutely.
Access it.
No, it's coming. I don't know. Even then with Skype, I don't think I'm going to use it with anybody except just Nicholas's grandparents, and that's going to be it. Because they don't need to see my ugly mug. I am not going to break my own camera on my own phone by allowing my face to be within visual range of the camera.
But you just can saying. Switch to using the rear camera on FaceTime.
I so don't need my face or my rear being on camera on my phone.
You what now?
Neither one. Nothing. Yeah. I made a bad joke. It's okay. We should probably move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That too.
The new iPhone OS is now going to be iOS.
Yay.
Because it's iPhone and iPad. And okay. Whatever other device they come up with
great.
In the future. Yeah, it's, it's shorter. It's easier to type. There you go. I'm happy.
Well, here's what I found interesting. And a little bit has been made about the fact that they're licensing the iOS name from Cisco.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
That's actually, the iOS is actually kind of what the internet is run on, pretty much. Anybody in the IT world will tell you that they deal with iOS every day on Cisco equipment. So just like with
the
original iPhone name.
I never got into that level
name.
Of network engineering, so I didn't. I know what you're talking about. I haven't dealt with that specifically, so the name just kind of.
Anyway.
But you're right.
So with the original iPhone name, Apple had to buy that name from Cisco. Okay, they bought that outright, but they're licensing the iOS name. What I thought was interesting is that they did not name it Touch OS. Which would still be more, you know, applicable to our current devices. iPod Touch, iPhone, iPad, be a Touch OS. And that's really more, I think, a definition of what it is. Instead, they're making it an iOS, which leads me to believe they're going to take this operating system and port it to devices that maybe you don't touch.
Like the Apple TV.
The operating system of an Apple TV.
Yes.
Which would be awesome.
It would be.
When the rumors leaked out about that last week or whenever it was, I was really excited that we're going to get something new at WWDC also. But
I guess not
because I'm going to steal too much thunder away from my phone.
Yeah.
I heard about that, I was thinking it would be really awesome to be able to run apps on your Apple TV. I mean, the Apple TV I think is a wonderful device with a very short-sighted, limited functionality at the moment. It's the type of thing that Apple really could blow it up into something else. They've chosen not to, and I understand why, and I'm not here to argue that point, but the idea is if you could use the iPhone OS on it, and if you could run apps on it, I would love to be able to do Facebook and Twitter. I would never love to do Facebook, but I would love to see
Facebook. Wow.
No, I would love to see Facebook available on it for the sake of all the users. I'd like to see Twitter. I wouldn't mind doing email.
Farmville.
Some basic web browsing. Oh, yeah. Farmville's right up there at the top of my list, which they also said is coming for the iPad. I got to say, during that point of the keynote, I was like, oh, my gosh, how do I fast forward this thing? Anyway, but the problem is, what would the interface be for the Apple TV?
Well, I don't know.
But I think the interface becomes that big iPad you guys have sitting on your lap.
Yeah, already the remote app for the Apple TV is pretty stinking cool.
Sure, yeah. Sure. But then, I mean, if you're going to, it kind of becomes a mouse type of situation or a trackpad type of situation, which means most of the apps that exist aren't really going to work on the Apple TV very well. So now you've got to design apps just for the Apple TV.
Well, here's what I think.
It's not really going to be the same as what we see with like the iPhone versus the iPad.
Right. We have seen that Apple has called the Apple TV a hobby, so it doesn't really belong with any of the other families. I think, though, if its closest relative is not the iPhone and the iPad, but the iPod. And so I think if we're going to see any new Apple TV introduced, I think it would probably be at the music event sometime in September. Okay? Because, I mean, they'll probably stick a camera or a better camera on the, or a camera at all on the iPod Touch, call it a day pretty much, maybe make it a little thinner. There's not, I don't know what else they can freaking do to the thing. And so I would think that that event would probably be ripe for a cloud-based iTunes service and, hey, a new streaming-only Apple TV.
Woo! I would like to see that.
I would love to see that. I would buy that in a heartbeat. If it really is going to be $99, like the Engadget
story said. Like the rumors have been saying, yeah.
I mean, I'll sign me up.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. It's fantastic. Yeah.
My most frustrating Apple product is my Apple TV. It is unreliable. It is frustrating at times. It is just, it upsets me sometimes. It's very un-Apple for them to not do something right and put it out there.
I didn't have any problems with reliability until it was running fine. I hacked it and put Boxy on it, and that was running fine. And then Boxy stopped Hulu stopped it, but Boxy no longer had Hulu support. So then I restored it back to factory settings. And then for probably about somewhere between 6 months and a year, I had some issues with it. Just weird stuff. It would crash. I don't know. Don't know what caused it. Couldn't find a consistent trigger for it all the time. It was just kind of freaky.
Mine too.
And then after that, all of a sudden, it's back to working just fine again. I don't have any stability problems with it currently.
Maybe Apple put you in timeout.
Maybe they did. Yeah, I that could be it. I've hacked it twice now with Boxy, and each time I've ended up just going back to the default.
Yeah, well, now I run Hulu with through my for Xbox. A while, and it was too much. I just didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah, the interface was not.
I think if anything, I was going to go in that direction. I would love to get a Mac Mini and put Mac Mini. Plex on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you guys talking about this with, you know, hacking your Apple TVs and so forth. And I don't have one, but that's kind of that same talk we had about, you know, iPhone versus Android. Do you want to be hacking something and trying to make it do what you really want to do? Or do you just want to get something out of the box that does what you want it to do?
In my case, the latter. I mean, Boxy is very powerful and there's a lot of stuff you can do with it. And I was very impressed with the level of configurability and all of the different plugins and all of the different things it could access. And I didn't care. I just wanted Hulu. That's it.
Just Hulu. Like Linux.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can make it do awesome things. You can make it look pretty, but man, you got to work at it. And
you have to make a clone of yourself and have one of yourself have your full-time job be configuring your Linux box the way you want it. And then your other clone or just your original self be the one that actually lives your life.
I spent enough time ripping and uploading metadata into my iTunes library for my wife. I made the mistake of buying her the entire Friends series on DVD for Christmas.
Yeah.
And she wants all those in iTunes for the Apple TV. So I've had to go through and rip those discs and convert those discs and then put. I'm really anal about my iTunes library. So everything has the proper high-res cover art and the proper metadata attached to it with actors and show description and date.
Oh, and you do the actors and all that too?
Yes. Nice.
I do the show description and date. I'm trying to go through and get most of mine on that now.
I want it to. When you pull it up, it needs to look exactly like you bought it from the store as far as a metadata perspective.
Let me ask you a question real quick, and I know we're off on all kinds of tangents here. By the way, AppChatter does not condone ripping even your own privately owned DVDs We are not lawyers here, and we are not providing any legal advice one way or the other. So whatever you do with your, even if it's your own stuff and you paid for it, and you should be able to make backups of it yourself, we are not commenting one way or the other on whether you should do that.
So what's your question?
Said, very my well question, said. How do you use a program to get all this data in? I tried something, it was Meta X or something like that at one point, and then it stopped working for me.
That's what I use.
That's what I use too.
It's not been updated in a while, and I wish it was. I wish it was still developed. I have not found a better alternative. If somebody knows of one, please let me know.
I have to do it manually, like item by item now, because anytime I take something and run it through Meta X now, it kills it. Kills the file and it won't play in iTunes, really? On the Apple TV, and the iPad, nothing.
I haven't had that problem. Had the problem where you used to be able to search for the title and it would pull up several results. Now I'm lucky to get one or two. I don't do it with TV shows and things like that, but with movies, I can pull that stuff in. I never had it break a file like that, though. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, maybe I'll try removing it and putting it back in or something.
And deleting the press and stuff.
All right, so back about six tangents ago, back to the WWDC stuff. That's okay. So the OS and software-related stuff. We already mentioned that Netflix is coming to the iPhone. We mentioned, very sadly, I hate to even use the word, but Farmville is apparently going to taint the iPhone very soon. iBooks is also coming for the iPhone, and this will get a Whisper Sync-like feature where it will it'll synchronize with the server to let you pick up where you left off on the iPhone versus the iPad, which I think is very important, and it's a very cool feature. It will also support PDFs, and of course, you can use bookmarks and annotations. I don't think the iPad version will let you do notes, will it? It'll let you bookmark, but I don't think it'll let you.
He showed it on screen.
Currently, or the new version?
The new version will. I don't think the current version on the iPad will let you do notes.
No, it will let you do really, like, really odd bookmarks by highlighting a word.
Right.
Since it's not really adding a feature odd. So much as it is doing it the right way.
I agree. Yeah.
But I didn't know it could do bookmarks until like 2 days ago after the WWDC announcement. I'm like, oh, great, it's going to get bookmarks. My wife was like, what do you mean? It's already got it.
Yeah, it's got it. I don't like how it's implemented, but they do have it.
Right.
The big one. Oh, yeah, and Bing, you know, you can set your default search engine to Bing. Okay, big deal. So iMovie for the iPhone.
Yes.
Which I got to say, I didn't care about until I saw the demo. And now after seeing the demo, it makes me want to go and take video with my new iPhone 4 once I get it, if I get it. It makes me want to focus on that. It looks like it's actually going to be kind of fun to do that now.
Yeah.
And how long is that going to last for? I mean,
I got a kid. What's Lou, that? This is the thing. When you get a kid, you will realize that the camcorder that you spent the money on, you're not going to carry around with you. The DSLR that you spent the money on, you're not going to carry that around with you. You're going to have your phone. And when your kid all of a sudden is engaged in some cool thing that you want to take a picture of, you have anywhere from 1.2 to 11 seconds.
No, I'm not so much talking about the video, because I like shooting video on my iPhone now.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about, you know, actually creating a movie in iMovie to do something with. I mean,
because a lot of people are going to do things out on the go, and they want to be able to just kind of do some quick edits to it and throw it up on, I guess, YouTube is what all the kids are doing these days.
Yeah, but, I guess. I just don't see it having a lot of staying power. I think you might do a couple of them, and then, you know what, I'll do it when I get home. I'll do it on my regular 24-inch iMac in real iMovie and have more control over it.
You can still do that, too.
Right.
But the kids in school on their lunch breaks, this will let them do it right there on the phone, and they can upload it.
Here's where I think the power of iMovie comes in, and as a professional video editor, like I want to bring it home and put it in Final Cut Pro and have all the control that I normally do on a project.
Sure,
but I think the power of iMovie has always been its themes are very well done, mm-hmm. and they look great and they're easy. And so I think what you're going to see is shorter 30, 60-second videos that are going to be nicely wrapped up, have two or three edits, maybe some generic music included in the app or something from their iPod library, and then they're going to wrap it up in this little theme. So instead of just kind of having these little snippets or whatever that you're just going to put out there on YouTube, now you could take it, dress it up a little bit, add some titles and nice transitions and these theme packages around it, and, mm-hmm. and put out something a lot better. Do I think people are going to sit there and edit 20-minute home movies on it?
No.
But I think it's going to be the shorter segments, the little almost trip updates that they can just do from their phone, and then just boom, send it out. Mm-hmm. That's going to be where I think it's going to be the most powerful, best utilized.
Okay, sure. So instead of sending three or four pitches to Facebook when I'm on vacation, I'll send a little 30-second clip of, hey, this is us at the Space Needle.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's really what it's going to be. It's not going to be for, you know, if you're spending more than, let's say, probably, I'm just going to pull a number out of a hat here, 10 to 15 minutes editing the video, you're doing it wrong. It's probably then something you're going to want to take home and do on a computer. But this is for just, you know.
I would disagree with that.
A 30-second video or a 5-minute video tops. And well, what I'm saying is, if you're going to want to sit there and spend hours editing a video and tweaking it out and having complete finite, you know, control over the minuscule details, it's not the right tool.
Right. But I think there are going to be some very cool things done on in iMovie for the iPhone.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's one of those times I wish I still worked for Apple so I could teach it.
Yeah, I mean, it looks really fun. It seems very intuitive, very useful.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to take it back to my computer and sync it back to the, you know, it does what it does, and it does it well, and it doesn't throw in a lot of fluff that you don't need. And it's going to be great for short video clips. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to.
And to make Jeff happy, once we all get our iPhone 4s, you can teach us.
There you go.
Exactly. There we go.
That'll be a miracle.
All right. So is there anything else from the WWDC that you guys think is noteworthy that we should talk about before we get into some of the other news that we have?
No, I think we kind of covered it all.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we did.
Cool. All right. Well, moving right along. The Retina display is false advertising. Boom. We'll just cut right to the chase. Okay. So Wired Magazine. I read
the article. Yeah, or a article on it.
Yeah, I should point out that the tone of the article is very, well, not actually, but close. So that's kind of the tone of the article. Wired has, it's on the, I don't know that it's in a print magazine anywhere, but it's on their website. Raymond Soniera, who is a president of DisplayMate Technologies, a PhD in theoretical physics from Princeton, and someone who has been studying displays for 20 years, says, quote, "It is reasonably close to being a perfect display, but Steve pushed it a little too far." He goes on to say that it's inaccurate to measure resolution of the eye in terms of pixels. Okay, you know, a little nitpicky, but fine. But to put it in equivalent numbers, we would need about 477 pixels per inch. Instead of, what is it, 326? Well, the Retina, Steve Jobs claimed, was 300, and instead it's actually about 477. Now, that being said, now this person said that we might not realistically need anything better than the iPhone's 326 pixels per inch. And I guess the reason that they wanted to point this out was they were talking about what they labeled as market puffery, where they talk about displays in general, you know, the contrast ratios and the resolutions and the number of colors. Now, Samsung's got this yellow thing, which I don't understand because yellow is already reproduced just fine on displays. But and I'm not even sure. I mean, the signal's not coming in any differently. So anyway, the point is, the article makes a point to say the Retina display claim is a little off. However, it's still probably the best display in any smartphone on the market. But for you you techies out there who are really specific about your stats, there you go. It's a good article too. I am fascinated by the way things are marketed, and the aspect of the market puffery in the second half of the article is really good. So check out wired.com and read up on that. The other thing that came out is there's a third party who challenges the durability of the glass screen on the iPhone 4. They say that it shattered after a 3.5-foot fall.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the same thought.
I mean, it's going all over the internet. We got, you know, it's newsworthy. We got to report it. Sure. But it's, and this is also a version that had no internal components. And I got to think that's actually going to take a fall differently.
Yeah.
Than
yeah,
something definitely. With, yeah.
You know, yeah, so I mean, you don't have to watch too many Mythbusters to know that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that this has a lot of credence to it. I don't know. I mean, I always get a case for my stuff anyway because I'm so paranoid that something's going to happen to it. Like my wife might get a hold of it.
Ooh.
And, well, of course, I would never know if it got broken because she would lose it before she'd break it. So, you know, who knows?
She's not listening to that, is she?
She doesn't listen to the show, so yeah.
So you can say whatever you want.
That's awesome.
But now, you know, Steve never claimed that the new phone was unbreakable.
Well, yeah. No, not just unbreakable.
He said it was stronger than plastic, which, you know.
Which okay. is true.
And which more is durable, true. But...
it's the sudden impact factor that is the issue. I'm sure that it's not going to bend or snap in your pocket or anything like that. But yeah, if you drop it and it hits a solid object, of course, most glass is going to do that when you hit a solid object.
Yeah. Now, one of the articles I read did say something about the fact that because that glass is raised above that aluminum bezel now, it's more exposed.
So is it?
Is that going to be an issue...
Huh?
You know, down the road because it sits.
I didn't realize that. I thought that the band actually is. So if you lay it down flat, it's up higher than the band. But right. if it's on its side, I thought the band sticks out more around the side than the glass does.
Oh, it does. I'm talking. If it was set down like kind of kitty corner where you tap the corner first, maybe that corner's gonna be glass hitting the ground instead of aluminum.
Well, Apple is selling these bands now that go around the outside on the aluminum, and I wonder if that covers.
I was thinking the same thing, and they cover the glass. But then you're going to cover that beautiful aluminum. Sorry.
It's actually stainless steel.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
With an ugly piece of plastic. I mean, the bands look kind of ugly, I think.
You can get the pink one to match your phone peg.
My movie peg, yeah. Movie peg,
yes.
Yeah, speaking of tangents, I see here on the show notes, we're jumping to the end of the show notes, but movie peg has a contact form for their iPad.
Yeah, if you go onto the MoviePeg website, which is movie-peg.com, on their blog, they have an update talking about MoviePeg for the iPad. They've finally gotten it. I think their design nailed down. And I think they're about to move into production. If they say, I'll quote their website, if you want to be the first to know when MoviePeg for iPad is available, use the contact form, send us an email. Word to the wise, we're going to have something special available for those in the first in the queue.
Interesting. I don't know how I missed this, but
so I filled out the contact form because I'm anxious for it.
Nice. And they did say they're working on an iPhone 4.
Oh, did they?
Version also, yes.
Well, awesome.
And this contact us page also has, there's a drop down list here. And one of the options is keep me in the loop about. I'm sorry. I'll come back to that. I just saw something else out of the corner of my eye that...
Okay.
Oh, no. Now I've got the giggles. We've got one cranky person and one guy who's going to have the giggles for the rest of the show. This is awesome. anyway, so you can also sign up to be notified about the iPhone 4 version of it. No, I'm just immediately above the keep me in the loop about MoviePeg for iPad one is look what I did with MoviePeg.
Yeah,
and I guess for some strange reason, I just started getting some kind of juvenile toilet humor type jokes in my head. Not even anything specific. Just why would you want to ask people to put that in a contact form? But anyway, all right. Wow. Okay. So, I'm gonna finish signing up for that once the show's done here. Something that's really got me kind of cranky. I don't know if you guys do much with RSS. I'm kind of an RSS junkie. I don't really browse the web anymore. It's just all Google Reader or, anything that syncs with Google Reader on the iPhone or the iPad. But there's a very popular one that was just released recently called Pulse. And Steve Jobs even mentioned it during the keynote. It looks to be a very, very awesome RSS reader.
It is. I've picked it up.
Awesome. Well, and then before I get to the news about it, why don't you tell us what you think?
Well, Pulse was developed, I think, by a couple of students, and they go to a major college, and I cannot for life remember which one. It's like Stanford or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's a great little RSS reader. It's not the typical kind of just list all the headlines that you got. You scroll through them, you mark them as read, whatever. It tries to take, because almost every article nowadays is going to have some kind of picture attached to it, and it really presents the pictures in kind of a row by row layout, and so that you have one row for this feed, one row for your next feed, so on and so forth. So let's say, for example, you have the unofficial Apple weblog, then you have maybe like Slash Film, and then maybe like People News or whatever, and each of those has its own row, and then you can slide each row horizontally left or right. The rest of them don't move. It's just independent, and then you just tap on the picture you want to see, and it's got a kind of a pop in that comes up. And it's really elegant. It's got a great just text-based reader. You can alternate between the text and the actual web view if you want to. And then you can just kind of scroll down your list and look on and so forth. It's just a really – it's pretty. It's elegant. It's well done. It's responsive. They've done a lot of work to make it more stable, which has been great. It's got a couple of drawbacks in that it's limited to 20 feeds. So you can have a total – no more than 20 total RSS feeds for it to refresh. It can import from Google Reader, but it does not sync with Google Reader. And so, but you can also just search for an RSS feed. So if there's just some random thing out there that you think has an RSS feed, you can just search and it'll try to go out there and find it. And you can add that to your list, which is great. It also has a list of featured kind of some popular RSS feeds, you know, CNN and BBC News, Daily Finance, Engadget, ESPN, so on and so forth, that you can just select from and add as well. So really, really great. It's been nice. I've kind of shelved Net Newswire for the iPad and kind of gone over to Pulse, and I've really appreciated it. There are some feeds which I don't like reading in Pulse, which I save for Net Newswire. But on the whole, it's a great presentation. I really enjoy reading it. Kind of makes the RSS feeds a little more interactive. I haven't really enjoyed the newspaper-like RSS feeds. I think there's one called Early Edition for the iPad. And that, to me, feels more novelty and a little more form over function. And Pulse seems to be a really nice blend between form and function. And so it's got some room to grow. There's no doubt about it. But so far, it's a great app. And it's really just kind of come out of nowhere and has really been all over the place. And then really, of course, that peaking being mentioned in the keynote at WWDC.
And it's not that expensive either. It's $3.99. Yeah. And I know a lot of the other RSS readers, especially for the iPad, are significantly more than that. So it looks beautiful. I've seen it all over the place. But the two things you mentioned that are keeping me from using it are the lack of sync with Google Reader, which I kind of need, and the fact that it'll only do 20 feeds. I subscribe to, I think, a little under 100.
Yeah.
So I then have to pick and choose what I use with Pulse and what I save for a different program. But then if I'm going to do them in another program anyway, it seems silly to have it in two places. So, but Pulse looks awesome. Yeah. And that consensus.
Have they said why they're limiting that to 20 feeds?
Well, because you kind of understand it once you kind of get into the interface. I mean, it's propagating and pulling in all these images and really displaying those. Whereas a normal news reader is just going to display you the headline and you can fly through those.
But this would be a lot more sluggish if you had to load.
Yeah.
Like if I did 100 feeds, the program would probably, you know, go to a crawl.
And I think that if it was able to sync with Google Reader, I would tell you to go ahead and pick it up, because I think you could pick your 20 best or feeds you really enjoy, and then you would just mark those as read, and then you'd come back later and get your other kind of feeds you don't really – I don't know how you read RSS. I have a lot that I just kind of skim through that I don't really pay attention to.
Yeah, where there are other feeds that I read every single thing they post. So,
right,
yeah.
No, and that's something that you want to put in Pulse.
Yeah.
Because the other stuff that you just kind of skim through, you could save for later. If it had a sync option with Google Reader where it would mark the ones that you're really paying attention to, go ahead and mark those red that you could then sync with later for another application, I would tell you to go ahead and pick it up. But
if that were the case, I would, because then I wouldn't be doubling up on what I'm reading. And I can definitely see where reading stuff in using this methodology would be a lot more fun.
Yeah.
If nothing else.
I like it.
So cool. It was dropped from the App Store the same day that Steve Jobs mentioned it in the keynote.
You could have told us that before. Got us all psyched up about it. And
well, no, it's yours. Back now. It's back. So it's okay. But here's the thing that really grinds my gears. The reason it was dropped was that the New York Times gave them they didn't contact them. They contacted Apple and gave them a cease and desist and said, you need to pull this because it's violating our copyright. They said, quote, the Pulse Newsreader app makes commercial use of the NewYorkTimes.com and Boston.com RSS feeds in violation of their terms of use. Thus, the use of our content is unlicensed. The app also frames the NewYorkTimes.com and Boston.com websites in violation of their respective terms of use. In other words, it frames it so it displays it within its own wrapper. Now, here's what I don't understand, and maybe there's a perfectly legitimate explanation. And if that's the case, I'm willing to calm down and you can explain it to me and I'll retract everything I'm about to say. But the New York Times publishes an RSS feed, which means RSS readers such as Pulse and Google Reader and NewsRack and Byline and all kinds of other RSS readers, both on the iPhone, iPad, Windows, Macintosh, all over the place, they are going to collect these stories and display them in their own wrapper. And you might have to pay for some of these programs. Now, to say that they're making commercial use of the New York Times, I think it is probably a little bit misleading, because they're not using the New York Times necessarily to sell their application. You buy the application, then you put what you want to into it.
Well, that's not. And here's the 2 points I think that the New York Times was making. One,
okay,
they were using shots of the New York Times in their marketing photos that they had on the App Store. Okay, so that's their site and their content in marketing for this particular program. That's a commercial use of their content.
Okay, that I had not read anywhere. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying I didn't know that.
Sure. So, and two, the New York Times feed came preloaded in the Pulse app. So when you loaded it for the first time, that feed was already in the interface.
But you're not buying it for the New York Times. So that one I'm okay with. I agree with you on if they used New York Times stuff in promotional materials. Okay, yeah, they probably shouldn't have done that. That's fine. But
in their promotional stuff, are they saying that it was preloaded with New York Times?
No.
Okay.
I can't remember. I'm looking right here at the...
And, you know, I mean, you put an RSS feed out there because you want people to pick it up and use it. What better... I mean, that's like having Internet Explorer coming bundled with Windows. I'd love to have my RSS feed bundled with an app.
Well, the stories that I've been reading were that they took it off of... Apple took it out of the store, and Pulse was removing the New York Times from the program and putting it back up. So, yeah, I'm sure it was included. Actually, one story had mentioned that they were going to block the New York Times from being able to be read in the application in accordance with the desires of New York Times. I can't imagine that's the case. I got to think that site got it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're going to, again, though, if it's a publicly accessible RSS feed, including it as kind of a sampling of what's out there, that's only going to benefit New York Times. I mean, they can take that out, and it's not going to affect the sale of Pulse any, because I can just go manually put that in anyway.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
I can't believe that this is just about another program that propagates their RSS feed. I think what happened, more than likely, is that, you know, somebody at the New York Times was, you know, streaming the keynote feed or whatever, watching the live blogs, and saw that it was, you know, said, oh, hey, I'll go check this out. And they saw their New York Times in the marketing material and just fired off an email to somebody, hey, can they do this? And then, oh, well, she's one of our stock cease and desist letters, and boom.
And well, and Pulse Apple wasn't shown. I thought Pulse was just mentioned. Was it actually shown on the screen during the keynote?
I can't remember either. Either way, it was real quick. I don't think it has to do anything about what was shown on screen at WWDC. More that it was probably just mentioned as an RSS reader or whatever, and then it kind of goes from there. I think it's more just kind of a knee-jerk reaction from the New York Times. Hey, they're using our stuff and they're printing their marketing material. Let's get them to quit that. And then Apple just pulled it. So,
well, the end result of the story is that it is back up, and this has gotten a lot of press on iPhone-related blogs, and Pulse will probably do quite well as a result. So more power to them.
Yeah.
Like I said, it looks like a great app. I want to be able to use this app, and like I said, I feel like I'm in a situation where it's not going to benefit me, but looks awesome, and more power to them. So yeah.
I've enjoyed it. I like it. I'll read feeds on Pulse first before I go to another app.
Well, it looks like it's just an easier interface to kind of skim through too, because generally the picture in an article will give you an idea of what the article is about, and it's a lot easier to just whip through a bunch of pictures than it is a bunch of text.
Yeah, it's nice. I really like it. It's a great way to. I wish it was a little more consistent in marking things as read. Hmm. Sometimes you can read an article and it doesn't mark it as read. Sometimes you don't and it marks it as read. So I'm not sure what algorithm it's using to mark those, but these are little tweaky things.
Yeah, it's version 1.1. It'll improve. It'll get there.
Yep. It's a great start. All right.
Speaking of cease and desists, apparently, if you email AT&T's CEO, you will not get a friendly Steve Jobs-like response back. Instead, you will get a cease and desist. There is an Engadget reader apparently emailed their CEO twice in the course of 2 weeks and got a phone call from their executive response team and a warning that further emails will result in legal action and a cease and desist. So, and yet the same user's emails to Steve Jobs were answered. Go figure.
That seems kind of a harsh reply.
Yeah.
Do we have any idea what the emails were he sent?
Yeah, they listed it on Engadget's website. The first one was...
Completely pedestrian. They weren't threatening or anything that.
No. The second one was about the AT&T's data rates and the changes, and it was basically a complaint saying, hey, I really think you should have stuck with the unlimited stuff. This new stuff kind of sucks.
Yeah, there was nothing threatening or that warranted this kind of response. Mm-hmm. And if this doesn't tell you the difference between these two companies, or really Apple and pretty much everybody else, nothing will.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think you could just easily replace, AT&T with Verizon or Sprint or anybody else, because I kind of love them all the same.
Yep.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I've had worse, far, far, far worse experiences with customer service with Sprint than I ever have with AT&T. Yeah, and AT&T's no saint, but...
My experience on the whole with AT&T has been fine. I've had one issue, and that was when I had to upgrade last year, and that was a big pain in the butt. And that was when they were all confused. And to AT&T's credit, they got out in front of that issue this year by go ahead and pushing everybody's upgrade date to now if you're upgrade eligible in 2010.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I got to say, that for all the complaints I have about the data plan, that's something AT&T really did not have to do.
Right, I agree.
And that's awesome. If you're we've got it somewhere here in the show notes. I'm not apparently looking at the right thing, but basically if you were due for an update anywhere in 2010, then you can upgrade to the iPhone 4 when it comes out with no penalty. So that's kind of cool. And if you purchased a 3G between May 1st and May 14th when they took them off the market, then basically you can just upgrade to the new iPhone 4 right off the bat. So that's kind of cool.
I mean, it's nicer doing that. I wonder why.
Well,
are they just being nice? Is there some other motivation behind that for them that they want?
Yeah, I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you exactly what it is. They raised their early termination rates. Right, we talked about that last week.
Right.
And so by doing this, they lock you into a 2-year contract so that you're hooked on the 2-year contract through next summer when Verizon gets the iPhone.
Hey, there it is again.
See, there it is again. That's why they're doing
all
it.
All comes back around.
We have proof. We have proof.
Yeah, I think that there was such a stink over this last year when people realized that they couldn't upgrade from the 3G to the 3GS because they weren't eligible. It was a huge deal. AT&T ended up coming back a month later and issuing a press release saying, yes, you can. We've changed that policy because we, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Well, but to be fair, it's people's ignorance. I mean, they should be reading their contracts. This is not new.
No.
This is the way it is for any phone.
Any phone. But, you know, the thing of it is, I really wish AT&T and the rest of the smartphone manufacturers out there, or, you know, the providers of it, would get the idea that, you know, these aren't just a phone. They're not something that you're going to get and live with for 2 or 3 years. Especially people that are into, you know, gadgets, they want the newest, greatest thing out there. And I don't want to wait 22 months out of a 24-month contract to get a new phone.
Well, if you want the newest thing out there, you can still get it.
Yeah, that's true. You can pay the full price for it.
Well, or like me, I'm eligible for the upgrade price plus $200. So I'm kind of in the middle.
Or you have a wife that takes your hand-me-down like I do.
Or I play the Father's Day card, yeah. It's awesome that they're coming out in June. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, now, speaking of this, I know it's a little out of order here. Pre-orders for the phones going on sale, what, next the 15th, I guess it is.
June 15th in the U.S. and the other countries that are getting it on June 24th, which I believe are, I don't have the list in front of me. I think Canada is one of them. I don't remember the others. And then there's going to be a whole slew of countries getting them in July.
In July, right. But now from a standpoint of how it works, how this happens, I go on to the website, presumably that morning I can pre-order my iPhone 4. It'll be shipped to my house like the iPad was the day of release. Is that how they're going to work that, do you know?
Presumably, yes. And then you would activate the phone at home.
Okay. So you'd, all by yourself, you just plug it and activate it and you're good to go.
Yep. And probably spend 5 hours on the phone with AT&T. I'm kidding.
Servers are hammered.
Yeah, that's going to be the catch. But April. I'm back on the iPad thing. June 15th is the pre-order date. June 24th is when you can pick them up in stores. Radio Shack is going to be carrying them, apparently, as will Best Buy.
Yep, they're going to have them on release date, they said.
June 21st. Yeah, the Radio Shack thing just came out, I think, maybe yesterday.
Walmart getting it?
I think Walmart is, too. There were several retailers.
I don't know about release date, but I know they're getting it.
I don't have the article in front of me, so I will go with what Lou said until I know more. I thought Walmart was getting it release date. I could be wrong, but I know that Best Buy and Radio Shack are.
So what this means is there probably not going to be any short supplies, I would not imagine, with all these venues having it.
I would hope not. Of course, with AT&T bumping everybody's upgrade date up, these are going to fly off the shelves.
Oh, I'm still pre-ordering.
Yeah, if I'm going to end up getting one, I still got to talk to the wife, but if we are going to get one, then I'm going to try to pre-order. I'm not going to go and wait in line in a store. Well, the nearest Apple store to me now is almost 2 hours away.
That's a trip.
Yeah, that's kind of obnoxious. The operating system, though, is going to be released June 21st. So if you're upgrading your current 3GS, or I think the newer models of the iPod Touch, then June 21st is the date you want. If you're upgrading a 3G, it'll still work, but you're not going to have half the features, and you should just probably go order an iPhone 4.
All right, then.
So there you go.
Hey, while we're on question answer period, I got one more question.
I got another answer. It might not be correct,
okay,
but
cool.
I've got an answer.
Upgrading phone now. So I've got my 3GS here next to me. I want to get a 4 when it comes out. Is there any way I can upgrade this phone and restore all the data that's on there the way it was? I know email and stuff will come down from the server the way it normally does. It's not a big deal. But stuff like SMS messages.
Save games, things like that.
Can you restore it from iTunes on the new system?
You should be able to, when you plug that phone in for the first time and you set up that phone, you should be able to set it up from a backup of a previous phone.
Yeah. Now, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to make sure that you have a recent backup before you get rid of the old one.
Right. We'll have them side by side. So.
Yeah. Well, I'll just make sure the iTunes performs a backup when you've got the old one before you plug the new one in. Then when you get the new one, plug it in and then do a restore. I think I did that when I got my 3GS. I'm pretty certain that I did. And I think it worked okay.
Okay.
So
yeah, you should be able to do that. That shouldn't be an issue at all. Should be a fairly painless process.
Yeah, because when I got the 3GS, I really didn't do anything like that because I do all the contacts and email and stuff off MobileMe syncing, so I don't worry about that with the iTunes. But I, you know, lost all my text messages and everything else that were in there. So,
you know, when I first got my 3G, not my GS, but my 3G, for about the first 8 months, it crashed all the time. I had to do so many full restores from backups, lost save games, lost all kinds of stuff. There were games I spent hours and hours and hours on and had to restart from scratch. That was such a frustrating time. And it was back when the backup took
forever. Like, yeah, I remember that. Yep.
I think there was one time it actually took me 5 hours to back it up.
Wow.
And then I had to walk to school uphill barefoot. In the snow, you know, way
you
back
had to crank the generator
horrible.
So you'd have enough power to do all this.
Yeah. And all you kids should get off my lawn, too.
Yep.
All right. What else do we have for news? AT&T, another thing that people aren't too happy about. There was an exploit on their website where over 114,000 email addresses of iPad 3G users were revealed. Most of them being business customers. Several of them being military email addresses, and this has been all over the news recently, including mainstream news like CNN and USA Today and things like that. The first thing I want to say about this is that this is not an Apple issue. It's an AT&T issue.
Yes. Yeah.
Just want to make sure that people are looking at the right people here. It's an AT&T issue. It has been patched. If you are worried about whether or not your email address was included, don't worry about it. It's an email address. You know how many people already have your email address and are sending you junk every day? One more person is not going to matter. The only information that was obtained were just email addresses. That's it. Basically, what the hack was is if you had the ID from the SIM card, then you could use that to extract an email address from the website. And that's it. No names, no account numbers, no financial information, just an email address. So, I mean, it's obnoxious and it sucks that it happened at all. And it's frustrating, but come on. It's not something to, you know, like really freak out about. That being said, the FBI is now investigating. That was announced actually a few hours ago. So, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm glad they're investigating. If people are going to pull stuff like this, I want them to not be able to do it anymore.
Right.
But if you were a victim, it's not that big a deal. So, I think that's it for the news.
Wow, that's a lot of news.
A pretty news heavy. Well, you know, complain to Steve.
We're already an hour and a half into this thing.
I know.
I'm not going to complain to Steve because he's giving me a new iPhone.
Just don't complain to the AT&T CEO.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get locked up. All right. Well, I don't have any apps this week other than my pick. Do either of you guys have anything before we get to the picks for the week?
Yeah, we'll move right to picks. I guess it'd be fine.
Let's move it on.
All right. Lou, what do you have?
I have the iFi app. If you've heard of iFi cards for your camera, the little SD cards you plug in that are Wi-Fi enabled cards.
EYE.
Yes, EYE. Right? Okay. I'm sorry. Yes, I should spell that out because we're so used to eyes on this show for everything else. same guys that make the cards for the cameras that are, you know, Wi-Fi enabled cards that allow you to, you know, take a picture and have it wirelessly transmit right to your computer, which is great for my wife because she never takes the card out of the camera and has pictures from 2 years ago on the phone. So, you know, it's nice to suck them right in and do that. But now,
right,
the iFi app is kind of works in conjunction with the service, not the card per se. I was kind of hoping that I'd be able to take my phone with me, my camera, take a picture and have it send it right back to my computer at home when I was out in the road. It doesn't work that way. Would have been nice, but it doesn't. what it does do, any picture you take with your iPhone, it will then send back to your computer. It, you know, the same thing happens when you plug it in, when you dock it, it will, you know, iTunes can come up and say, hey, do you want to pull these photos off? But I don't use it that way for most of the stuff. It's nice to have the photos just kind of go back automatically, whether I'm on a Wi-Fi service, whether I'm on 3G or any network I'm on. And I can delete, I dump them into one folder, I can suck them into iPhoto or Lightroom later on if I want to. But I know they're there, they're backed up, I know what folder they're in. So to me, it makes perfect sense. It's just a convenient way to keep my photos where I know where they are, so I don't, oh, what's on the phone, or I deleted them, or when I change phones now, if I don't do something with them, I could lose them all. So,
right.
I think it's a nice little system. It's all free, although you do have to have an iFi card because you need the account with them. You have to log on to their servers and get the account set up. So it's not free, but if you're using a camera with an iFi card, I think it's a great thing to do if you have an iPhone.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was looking at the iTunes page here for it. Did you say that the app is free, but in order to sign up for the iFi account, you do have to pay, or you do not?
Well, you have to buy an iFi card.
Okay, so you cannot get an account without a card.
Right.
Even though this app does not use a card itself.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. That's why I originally thought, boy, it's going to be great. I can go on vacation. I can transmit stuff back to my computer.
Right.
But no, it's just from pictures taken on the iPhone from your, you know, from your photo roll.
Hmm.
But you've got to have an iFi card that you've got an account with them and set up online, which is pretty simple to do. But, you know, an iFi card is usually, you know, a little bit more expensive than just getting a standard, you know, 4 or 8 gigabyte SD card too. So keep that in mind.
Hmm. Interesting. It does look pretty cool though, and I would love to be able to just seamlessly transfer photos from my iPhone back to the iMac without having to sync my iPhone. I mean, like I was saying before, having a kid, we've got two pretty nice cameras, nothing too fancy, but, you know, a DSLR and then a really good point and shoot, and yet most of my pictures are with my iPhone. I would love something like this to be able to transfer it back to the Mac, but I don't know. We've been thinking about picking up an iFi card anyway. We've got a Nikon DSLR. And yeah, do you like, I mean, okay, so you've got an iFi card on your regular camera. Do you like the service? You don't have to get into it.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good. I bought my wife a new camera for her birthday because hers was like, you know, 4 or 5 years old and big and clunky, and the display wasn't as good anymore. So I bought her a new Canon, you know, just inexpensive point and shoot. And I picked up a 4 gigabyte SD card that was an iFi card. And, you know, every time she comes home now from wherever she was out taking pictures, when she turns on the phone, the Wi-Fi signal in the house picks it up and says, okay, I'll transfer all these photos over for you. Dump them into one folder, and we can just go through them when we want to. You can set the service up to actually post photos automatically to Flickr or to Facebook, but yeah, I'd rather do that manually.
Yeah, I'd like a little more sifting through them first and deciding.
Exactly. You know, it's just, I hate people that put up every single photo they ever took on Facebook or on Flickr and like, oh, look at my trip. No, show me just the good ones.
Right. I don't need to see them all.
But yeah, as a service, it's very good. I like the fact that you can just take everything off automatically, because unfortunately, if I'm not around, she doesn't do it. And every time she wants to do it herself, she's got to bring me in the room to, how do I plug it in again? And where, what do I have to start up to get the photos off? So this just does it automatically. In fact, I think last week when we were recording, I'm sitting here talking with you guys, and all of a sudden, the corner of the screen, I see a little window pop up with photos downloading. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. She must be home. So that was kind of cool.
Wow, that's an added bonus. You can tell when your wife's coming in the house.
There you go.
So I tell you what, if you have an iFi card, this app looks like definitely something you need to get for your iPhone.
Yeah, if you have a card, it's free for it to use. So I wouldn't say get it, you know, buy an iFi card just to do this. But if you use the service anyways, I'd say this is a great thing to do.
Cool. All right, Jeff, what do you have?
I have a little app for the iPhone called Fruit Ninja.
Fruit Ninja. Fruit Ninja. I have seen this. I have not played it.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, I think it's like one of the top paid apps right now in the App Store, and it's really fun. It's a simple game that pretty much the premise is it just throws fruit in the air, and you like use like some kind of like ninja sword to like slice it in half. And so you're swiping across the screen, cutting all this fruit in half. And it's got two main game modes, one which you try to go and you don't let any fruit fall off the screen without being sliced, all the while you're dodging, it's throwing up little TNT bombs in the air as well. If you hit any of those once, game over. And so, like, my high, I think right now was like 150 or something like that. And in that particular mode, you get plus bonus points for combos. So if you slice three or more fruits at a time, you get a combo bonus for that. And there are also like critical hits, which give you a multiplier point bonus as well. Which is really cool. There's also another mode called Zen mode. There are no bombs. There are no penalties for letting fruit drop off the screen, but you have like a minute and a half to play, and that's it. So it's as many points as you can get while it throws a bunch of fruit at you in a minute and a half. And so it's really fun. It's a great game for just like if you're standing in a line or you're only going to be down, have a minute or two to do something. It's a great game for those little short downtimes. And I love little games like this, these kind of little shooter kind of games where you're just kind of reacting on the screen and just kind of real quick having some fun. It looks great. It's done very well. It's kind of a fun game. Like when you slice all the fruits, you see all the fruit juice splattered against the wall and things like that. And so it's really fun. It's 99 cents and really easy to get into. It's nice because you can kind of get into it and start having some fun with it, but it's got open faint integration into it, so you can see these online leaderboards in it. And some people have like 5,000 points, which is ridiculous to me. And so obviously you can get into it, and there's a learning curve, which you can get really ridiculously good at it. So it's fun. I like these kind of games that are just real quick, simple. Get in, have some fun, get out. Don't feel like I have to spend 20 minutes playing it to kind of get a return on investment.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah. I've seen it everywhere. I've not bothered to pick it up, but yeah, and it's got phenomenal reviews too.
Yeah.
Like 4.5 stars out of almost 7,500 ratings. That's hard to reach.
Yeah. So. It's a classic example of an app that has a small focus, but it's great at what it does. And I think too often games tend to just try to give this real deep experiences and just come off trying to spread too thin. And this is just, it's very simple. It's very, very quick, very easy, just very, really good at what it does. And so I like it.
Cool. And it's 99 cents.
Yeah. 99 cents.
We love cheap apps here at App Chatter.
Definitely.
So, all right, well,
and think how good that fruit's going to look in a new screen on the iPhone 4.
Oh, so, yeah, the fruit gore is going to be all over the place. Fruit, blood, and guts.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
The word.
All right.
And the fruit.
Yeah, no, we caught it. Ba-dum-ching.
I missed it at first, and you had to point it out, and I went, oh, boy.
Yeah, no joke is funny after the autopsy, let me tell you. All right, my pick for this week is a game called Carcassonne. I've mentioned this a little bit over the last few weeks. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. This is based on a board game, a tile-based board game, where the premise is that each player, each turn, they lay down a tile, which has various different segments of city pieces or farms or roads or things like that. And each turn, a player sets down a tile and optionally puts down one of their little tokens on it, which is called a meeple. Like people and me combined, it's meeple. Very clever. And that's the last time you'll hear me refer to them as meeple. So anyway, you put your little guy down on the tile, and you build cities or build roads or build farms, and that's how the points are collected at the end of the game. And it's a very simple game, yet it's also very challenging and has varying different levels of strategy. As I know, Lou has been learning recently. Lou is a new convert to this game. And I have been playing this game for years, just like on a table with people sitting around. And it's also available on Xbox Live, if you have that. And I was really worried about how they were going to get this awesome tile-based board game onto a little tiny screen, because the game board keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger as you add tiles. And, you know, you need to be able to see most of what's going on. And they did it. The interface, I got to tell you, for trying to get a lot of data on a small screen, the interface is awesome. I have no complaints at all about the interface. I will even say that if they were not going to turn it into a universal app with an iPad version, I would be perfectly content just continuing to play this on my iPad the way it is now. Fortunately, while it's $4.99 for the iPhone right now, there will be a free upgrade to a universal version. And that will make it so you don't have to pay $9.99, which is what the new price will be once that happens. So if you're going to get it now.
Get it now, yeah.
Yeah. But
now, Eric, I know this is your pick, but I do have one complaint with the interface.
I have two, but we'll do yours first.
Okay, well, well, you know, I'm under the impression that, and of course, because it's the way I think it should be right, when you turn your phone landscape mode, the little home button should be to the right.
Okay.
In this app, automatically puts it so it should be to the left. It will flip over for you.
Okay. Yes, all you Wii Rule people out there. Hey, but you know what? Unlike Wii Rule, this will rotate.
It does, yes.
Yeah, so it starts out one way, but if it figures out you're the other way, it'll flip for you.
The right way.
Yes.
Because the button's on the right hand. If that's what you feel, side.
Yes.
Yeah. Not right as in right and wrong, just, you know, right as in right side of the phone. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Which is also right and not wrong. See? See, you could do it both ways there.
There you go.
All right. Yeah. So my two complaints actually aren't so much with the interface as much as they are with the game system in the app. But I'll get to that in a minute. The interface for actually playing the game is awesome. And if you've never played it before, there is probably one of the best in-game tutorials I have ever seen. You will need audio. There is a narrator who is kind of in character, and there's cool music and stuff. It's really clever how they did the tutorial. You will need audio, but go through the tutorial, and you will at least have the basic understanding of how to play this game. And as you play more and more, you will start to you'll develop new strategies and stuff. The actual game itself, again, it's pretty simple, and it's not too hard to catch on. But wow, you get some of the hardcore players in the multiplayer mode, and it's tough. It can get tough if you're playing against good multiplayer opponents. But that's okay, because there are multiple different AIs in the game, varying difficulty levels. And so you can play solo. You can play internet against one person or multiple people in a single game. You can have multiple games going at once, much like Words with Friends, for example. So that's kind of cool. And you can either play with friends that you have, or you can do quick play. And quick play is a little bit different. It pairs you up with one random person on the internet, and you have 60 seconds per turn. So you have to be there for the game. And there's, 60 tiles? So do the math. And it doesn't take 60 seconds per turn. So I'd say a game is probably going to be about 20, 25 minutes. But if you don't take your turn within those 60 seconds, then you're considered inactive, and then you automatically lose the game. So you have to commit to that. But with regular internet play, that is not the case. You can play one turn a day if you want. It's up to you and your friends. There are push notifications that will notify you when it's your turn, so you can hop back into the game. There is a new solitaire mode. If you are a veteran player of this game, there's a solitaire mode that has to do with trying to accomplish two different things with the fewest number of tiles as possible. I won't explain that because I don't really think it's a big selling point, but look for it if you're a veteran and you're looking for something new. Now, the bad thing, there are two issues I don't like. One, it's a really minor quibble. In order to get back to the main menu, you have to go into the the settings button from within the game, and then there's an option there that says pause game. And if you click that, it will take you back to the main menu where you can start a new internet game or a new solo game or whatever. The thing is, it doesn't actually pause the game, because there's no pausing. You've either taken your turn or you haven't.
So they got to do something to eliminate that button entirely, because pause game, it doesn't pause the game. And they need to put a main menu button somewhere in the actual game interface itself. The other thing, and this actually is a big problem that I hope that they fix. If you want to pair up with somebody on the internet that you know to play a game, you, from within the app, you send them an email and it has a link. And when they get the email, you click on that link. It's an application link. It's not a web link. So when you click on that link, it will pull you into Carcassonne and start a game with that particular player, unique to that link. The problem is, it's done through email. So if I want to get out there on the internet, like I did for something like WeRule, and say, hey, everybody add me and I'll add you. Well, then now I've got to give my email address out to everybody. And I don't like that. So they need to get...
Didn't AT&T already do that for you? Sorry, oh, I'm getting punchy. It's getting late.
Points for Lou. That was good. That was good. No, so the thing is, they need to implement OpenFaint or Plus or something like that. Now, I kind of got around it tonight. I got onto Twitter. I started up a fake email, copied that link out of it, canceled the email, and I've posted that link in my Twitter account, and we'll see if that... if that helps any, because that doesn't give away my email address per se, and yet people should be able to go into Twitter on the iPhone, I assume, and click on that link and pull it up. Now, I don't know, because it might depend on the Twitter application as to whether it treats it like a link or not. I don't know. Regardless, that's something they desperately need to fix, but otherwise, this is... wow, that's, I just can't say enough good things about this application. This is probably my favorite game ever for the iPhone or the iPad. It's my favorite board game ever, too, so it's hard for me not to like this. But I'm very glad to see that it's taking off. It's got a 5-star rating out of almost 400 reviews, and it's only been out for about a week. So that's not too bad. I've seen a lot of positive reviews. I don't think I've seen any negative reviews on it at all on the internet. So... good stuff. It's called Carcassonne. It's spelled Carcassonne. So it's a double S and a double N. If you try to double up the other letters like I did the first time, you will be very sad, because you will not find it.
And so, I'll speak from somebody who is brand new to the game. I am totally hooked. It's got so many levels of challenging strategy that it's just, when you add three players, and it's just a whole different game entirely.
Yeah, I shouldn't have started that game.
This was really bad.
And the problem is, the person we started the three-player game with, he's really good. I mean, when I played on the Xbox, I played on expert level, and this guy is just mopping the floor with me. So, yeah, Lou, I hate to break it to you, but neither you nor I stand a chance in this three-player game that we're doing.
Hey, that's how you learn, right?
Well, exactly. You play against really good players, and you watch what they do, and you see how you get boxed in, and then that teaches you how to play better in the future. But the multiplayer is awesome. Push notifications. You can play on a local network via Bluetooth or Wi-Fi if you don't want to do it over the internet, or if you're on a car trip or whatever.
I tell you, there is one thing startling about the push notifications. I normally don't have my sound on the iPhone.
Yeah.
And last night I came home, had the iPhone, sound was on, and it's over on the dresser, and I'm talking to my wife, and we hear this, "It's your turn." I'm like, huh? What was that?
Yeah, this nice, loud, deep voice saying, "It's your turn." And yeah, I kind of jumped out of my seat the first time I heard it.
Whoa.
Well, I have my iPhone in my pocket, so it both vibrated and said that at the same time, and I'm like, it's my turn for what? My couch is talking to me. Yeah, it was kind of weird. And you can chat with the players too that you're playing with. I know that sounds like kind of a simple, nonsensical thing, but that kind of helps too. All right, I'm sorry. I'm excited about this application. I've been waiting for it ever since I first heard about it. Even Plants vs. Zombies was not something I was looking forward to as much as this app. This is just the epitome of awesomeness to me. So forgive me. I won't normally rave about something like this one. I'll be better next week, I promise.
So you won't be laughy. Jeff won't be cranky. Good. Okay. So we have a plan.
I can't make any promises. Don't you dare speak for me.
Yeah. See, you got to watch it, Lou. He's still in the cranky mode.
He's still cranky. I should wait till next week for that.
And I'm still fixated on the look what I did with my movie peg. Wow. I would never put that in a web form. Okay. Anyway, sorry. So anything else we need to discuss? I think that's probably it.
I think we've come to the end.
Yeah, we're almost at 2 hours again. Darn that, Steve Jobs. Man. All right. For more app reviews and news, check out appchatter.com. There is some good stuff there. There's more details on the iPhone 4. We did not cover literally everything here on the show, so you should head over there for a few more details.
Yeah, we didn't cover iAds.
Yeah, we didn't cover iAds. We didn't cover the Rock Band app. Was it Rock Band or Guitar Hero? Guitar Hero. I always get the two confused. For months. Yeah, right. I've actually got that one. The Guitar Hero actually looked pretty good.
I saw Risk is coming out.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't part of the keynote, but Risk is coming out, and it looks pretty good.
But there's no multiplayer over the internet.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, they gotta fix really? That. Well, tell you what, we will talk more about that when it actually comes out. But
we will.
We definitely will.
Maybe even
in the meantime, though, we will definitely review it, too. I love Risk. I'm really bummed you can't play over the internet. I didn't know that. Maybe they'll change that last minute. All right, appchatter.com for your iPhone and iPad news and reviews. You got to check it out. Don't just listen to the podcast. Go to the website, too. And you can use it in an RSS feed reader. it's so late. You're not the only one who's punchy, Lou. But you can throw it into Pulse. And that would be an awesome way to get to try out Pulse. Should be kind of cool. You can check out our other podcasts at randomchatter.com. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/appchatter and twitter.com/randomchatter. And be sure to add us in the various different gaming systems, OpenFaint and Plus. I'm Eric Blythe, ERIKBLYTHE. Lou is Mile High, that's MYLEHIGH. And Jeff has the good common sense not to play such games.
What are we talking about?
Wrong. See, there we go. I already put him to sleep. So that's it. We will see you next week, where hopefully I will be less tongue-tied, Jeff will be less cranky, and Lou will be his good old consistent self.
I'll just be here, yes.
Yes. All right. See everybody next week.
Night, everybody.
For more great app reviews, check out appchatter.com. The songs in this episode are My Own Little World and Unlikely, both written and performed by Cell Dweller, which you can find at celldweller.com. The show is part of the Random Chatter Podcast Network, which you can find at randomchatter.com. This show is copyright 2010 appchatter.com, and as silly as a sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care.